You're listening to The Daily Digestionalist with Matthew Heidmark at RadioArian.com.
And welcome to the Daily Traditionalist. Today's date is the 27th of March 2017, and it's the start of another week. Unfortunately, we don't have Matthew Heinbach with us today, but we do have Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson with us, and we have a particularly interesting program planned for you today as well. Dr. Johnson, how are you doing?
You know, I'm not doing half bad. You know, regardless of how bad things get in our lives, we realize that it's the mission and the struggle that get us out of bed in the morning. You know, this is why we're here. So we go up and down, you know, in moods and finances and everything else, but this is what we're here for, and this is what gets us motivated.
Yeah, it's a struggle. It's a struggle that keeps us alive, I think. It keeps improving us. And I personally just think it's a great honor to be able to serve our people in the way that we do, making these podcasts. And I'm honored to be able to make them with you, with all the research that you've done over the years, and particularly in the topic which we're going to look at today, which is Khazaria and the Khazarian Jews. There's a lot of DNA research that's been done. Some shows that the Jews go back to being these Khazarians, and other DNA research shows that they don't. But besides all of that, we do have a historical record of Khazaria being Jewish, particularly a church historical record, which is what I really wanted to talk to you about, Dr. Johnson. And we've also I've been asked in the comments whether I would be able to get you to do something like this and to elucidate on just what all of this is, because some people have heard that the Jews, well, the Khazarians, or the Khazars, all converted en masse to Judaism, and other people have heard that it was just the aristocracy that did. So maybe we should start with just what happened around about the 7th or the 8th century. What's it all about, basically?
Well, the Khazar Empire was a predatory state. It existed solely for commerce, and largely what it did is it charged tolls on the lower Volga and the Dnieper going into the Black Sea. It was a slave trading empire. It didn't produce anything. These are former nomads that became settled and became a part of this, essentially a mafia-style state. They were feared throughout Europe. They used mercenaries, but they respected no rules of chivalry, no rules of war, and they were seen as demonic in what they did to their opponents. They were often compared to the Assyrians in their behavior. And, you know, things were changing at this period of time. Islam was growing, of course, Orthodoxy and Catholicism. But by adopting Judaism, they were able to maintain their independence, which is really what it came down to. They had a set of books, the Talmud, which existed at the time, which they were able to use as their, you know, more or less constitution for the intellectuals. And it justified slavery, as it did in Islam. And it set out their identity as an ethnic group. And now, of course, at the time, people followed the religion of their rulers. This was never a private decision that people made. If the aristocracy converted, everyone else converted. The concept of a forced conversion at the time is an anachronism, because people simply, you know, followed it's the old holdover to the idea that your gods are stronger than mine, so I better convert or I'm going to get in trouble. And that's really, the setting is, though, that the Khazaria needed to set out its independence, and it did so by adopting Judaism. And because of the way things were, most of the population accepted it. That doesn't mean that their mercenary armies did, though, but they were paid very well. But as far as living within the boundaries of the empire, most of these people did convert to Judaism, yes.
So they started out kind of like bandits, I guess. And where it was situated, it's situated between the east and the west. So I should imagine trade had to pass through Khazaria, and they could tax the people that went through as some form of income. And you had the Christian Europe to the west of them, and then further down to the east and to the south, you had Islam that was taking hold. And one idea that I've always thought about is life was made pretty uncomfortable for the Jews in the Byzantine Empire. Once Constantine made Christianity the religion of Rome, they brought out all these laws that Romans couldn't marry Jews, Jews couldn't have Christian slaves, Jews couldn't be involved in public office, Jews couldn't be involved in usury. So they made all these laws that made life very uncomfortable for the Jews. And it seemed to me that the logical place for them to move to would have been to head north to Khazaria. Is there much evidence for that, for them moving from there to Khazaria? And this would have been, I guess, before the conversion of the nobles in Khazaria. But is there much evidence for that, do you know?
Well, prior to the conversion, there were really a mess of people. There were Christians, there were pagans, there were Jews, there were Muslims. The Byzantine Empire had a bishop there for a long time. And even after the conversion, they tolerated quite a bit of diversity in that respect, although, you know, citizens converted just out of necessity. But they, you know, becoming a people of total commerce and middlemen and money men derives from the position, as you say, the Khazar Empire being in this perfect position on the Black Sea, on the lower reaches of both the Dnieper and the Volga rivers, some of the two most strategic rivers in the world, straddling Europe and Asia in a perfect position. And so long as their enemies feared them, they were able to charge tolls on trade, and that's where their income came from overwhelmingly. So that was the key, making sure that they were so violent that saying no to them was out of the question. Now Russians paid tolls to them for years, and many slaves from the Slavic peoples were taken by them, and so it was Svatoslav that eventually is smashed the Khazar Empire with overwhelming force, and he was the only one who can do it, and that was a great victory for all humanity at the time.
And what happened after that then? Did they move into Poland and Russia? I know that I think the earliest signs we have of these Jews are in Russia and Poland, aren't they?
Well, that's the great strength of the Khazar theory, is that it explains this explosion of population that occurred slowly but surely throughout Eastern Europe. All of a sudden, they're being brought in by the Polish nobility, Hungarian nobility, to take power from the monarch by taking over the trade in the cities. Speaking Yiddish, which, by the way, is a Turkish language, not a German one or anything like that, and it proves the Khazar thesis, by the way. No one else knew what they were saying. And the whole point of Yiddish as a language was, in their trades from, you know, Turkey to the Far East, they could protect their communications, and no one else knew what they were saying. And that's really where it came from. And there's plenty of Jews who accept that idea. So even there, the development of Yiddish is a predatory development. But yes, you're absolutely, the premise of your question is correct, yes.
Well, I should imagine they probably picked up quite a few German additives to Yiddish as they went along. I think it's quite a bastard language of a few different origins. Now, you were saying there about them taking the tolls from these rivers, from the tradesmen and the people that were passing through the country. Now, that's interesting, because the first thing they were doing in Britain was as tax collectors. So their skills that they learned of extorting money from the people that were having to pass through Khazaria were then put to use by the nobility. Do we have any evidence of usury at all before they moved into Russia and Poland? Were these Khazars, were they involved in money lending as well?
Well, absolutely. This was a very wealthy empire. Khazaria was one of the richest empires in the world at the time, which is why they were so fearsome, given their location and the coherence of the inner circle, like the Spartan inner circle, thanks to Judaism. They were heavily involved in money lending. One of the great advantages of adopting Talmudic Judaism is that they were not supposed to be predatory with one another, but they could with the outside world. And so they were able to weaken their opponents to some extent that way. So yes, there is evidence of it.
And the Talmud justifies treating all non-Jews just as slaves, basically, of the Jews. All the possessions can be taken, they can be deceived. So you had a religious framework there to justify doing this to the other nations around them. And they would have interbred.
Yeah, my personal opinion is they became as vicious as they were. They were a brutal people to begin with. And then they see the Talmud accepts this kind of brutality, so long as they're not a countryman. And it justified how they were, and it justified further brutality, which is what they were known for universally at the time. And I think my personal opinion, this is why they adopted the Talmud, because it specifically gives them that kind of green light.
Well, they must have been particularly brutal to be associated with the Assyrians.
I did a podcast on Khazaria years and years ago. It's on the Trad Youth website. It's on my website somewhere. And I spend a lot of time, because I've always made the claim that the Jews collectively are Antichrist. This is the Antichrist, their prophecy. And Adam Kadmon is this individual, this person that's going to rule and perform all these miracles and everything else. That's the new man that they were going to create. But that's not my personal opinion. The church, especially of the early Middle Ages, especially in the West, the Greek church in Aquitaine, in southern France, had developed the idea that the Khazar Jews were, in fact, the prophesied Antichrist. Because of their brutality, and connecting them with the Assyrians, with, of course, an Old Testament reference, everyone accepts the brutality of the Assyrians. They were particularly nasty in that respect. And what I mean by that is that they didn't, unlike the Spartans or the Greeks, they didn't accept normal rules of war, what we would kind of call chivalry today. They did whatever they could to win. It was the Aquitaine church in South Italy. People who had a day-to-day dealing with them in trade and elsewhere that developed the idea that there is something more here. There's a spiritual hatred there. There's a demonic power here. So it's not my opinion. This was the opinion of the church throughout the Middle Ages.
And do you think the idea of Kabbalah and paganism and the blood rituals that they went through, do you think some of that would have been going on with the Khazars before they converted to Judaism?
Yeah, I've always thought that anyone dedicated to commerce and living that completely unnatural life, has to get involved in some kind of magical practice. The idea of magic is forcing more from nature than it normally would give. And because we know that metal is barren, money doesn't reproduce itself in any way, it's not organic, usury says it does, and so therefore it's unnatural. You automatically have a connection with magic and alchemy. And creating a group of people that accepts that as right and normal is what alchemy was really all about, not only in Khazaria, but elsewhere. So the two of them are very closely connected. They're not opposites. They're counterparts, so to speak.
Well, these records then that we have of Khazaria, there are lots of records of them in the church and the attacks and the barbarism of these Khazars. Are there records of that in the church?
Everywhere. Greece, all throughout Byzantium, South Italy, Aquitaine, even the German states of northern France in the early Middle Ages, all speak of them as Jewish. And as this very violent, predatory group of people, and also a very wealthy group of people, they had to deal with them. I mean, dealing with Asia at all meant that the Black Sea was necessary. They were too strategic for anything else. So you couldn't ignore them, generally speaking, especially if you wanted to deal with the Mediterranean at all. They were dominant. So, you know, it comes up all the time, especially in the early Middle Ages, yes.
Well, I should imagine once the Khazar kingdom fell and they were working for these nobles in Poland and Russia, that was when they became known as Jews, Polish Jews, Russian Jews, rather than Khazarian Jews, because Khazaria was no more. Do you think it would have been about that time that they took on just the name of Jew, and before that they'd been known as Khazarians, Khazars?
Yeah, I mean, Khazar was an old name for Jew for a very long time. But when you say noble, what we really mean are those who, both on the one hand, military men, who were able to extract more money than normal from the subject populations on the one hand, and then, of course, the merchants on the other hand. So that was very different from the nobility you would find in Europe. It was Svatoslav, the son of Igor and Olga, that destroyed the Khazar Empire once for all. But that destroyed the political structure of the capital city of Itil. They still had fragments and centers all throughout the region. The island of Kaffa in the Black Sea was always a slave trading post, completely dominated by Jewish traders. That remained. And it took the Cossacks later on to finally destroy the remnants of Khazaria.
Well, that was all completely outlawed by the Byzantine Church, wasn't it? The taking of slaves, Christian slaves. So they would have had to have moved to Khazaria in order to carry on with all the traditional trades that the Jews have been involved in. That was the only area they could move to, I would guess, without converting to Islam and becoming Muslims, because they couldn't have got away with that in Europe at the time, in Christian Europe. That was the only place they could go to. One thing that I question a little bit about it is, you're saying that they were these mercenaries and they were really fierce. Well, we don't really think of the Jews today as being mercenaries or warriors in any way at all. So do you think that the Jews were part of this aristocracy there, and the Turkic Khazar people, they were more like the brawn, as it were, and then you had these more intelligent Jews that were running things at the top? That's the only thing that I sort of have a question about. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, it's the same thing as what I meant. The nobility, converted everyone around them because of the power they had, either in a military sense or in a mercantile sense. I just wanted to mention that it was a Druthmar of Aquitaine, who in the early Middle Ages was a dominant intellectual figure in the 9th century. He wrote a commentary on Matthew 24, and he said that Khazari, or the Khazars, were the people of Gog and Magog. And from there, so-called Red Jews. And they were known as that throughout the Middle Ages. And that's what, and keep in mind also that the Bulgar people, just to the east of them, were also related to the Khazars. Not identical, they were not Jews, but that's where a lot of the remnants of that empire fled to. And that took Ivan the Fourth or Ivan the Terrible to finally destroy. So it was centuries of war with the remnants of Khazari. I mean, the entire reason the Cossacks exist is to save slaves from the Khazar Jews and their Islamic buyers throughout the Black Sea region. That's why they exist. That's their whole purpose. And so it took centuries to destroy the remnants of the Khazar Empire.
I think I've heard of the Bulgars said in the same sentence as the Cathars and these other Gnostics. Would that be right? Would they have been these Bulgars following a sort of Gnostic way of doing things, being seen as heretics, the same as these Khazars were seen as Jewish heretics and antichrists?
The Volga Bulgars, I've not heard that connection. It's very possible. Obviously, they were extremely anti-Christian. They were pro-Jewish for the reason we've already spoken of. They were destroyed by Ivan IV. And although there were many campaigns waged against the Bulgars, and the Bulgars seemed to behave very much the same way that the Khazars did. So there's got to be a connection there. And they were to the east, but just as strategic in terms of trade, and they acted in the same way. And there were numerous attempts to destroy them, and it took really the destruction of Astrakhan was actually within the old Khazar Empire. But this was absolutely necessary to destroy what was left, not only of Judaism, but the Jewish mentality. On the other hand, the Polish Empire brought them in and gave them a new lease on life. And so by 1600, 90% of the world's Jewish population lived within the Polish Empire.
So what they really should have done is kept them out, but the greed of the Gentile nobility, the Polish nobility, wanted to bring them in and use them to make money from the peasants. And that's what led to the problems that we have today. So they were really the devils and the demons and the boogeymen from the 6th, 7th century onwards up until the 11th, 12th century. We had Jews moving into Britain in 1066 with William the Norman, using them as tax collectors. And they came in, and straight away they were being accused of blood sacrifice and human sacrifice, taking Christian children and draining them of blood. And that's not something you read about happening in the Old Testament, or it's not something that you really associated with the Jews up until that point. I would guess that was something that they picked up while they were in Khazaria, these blood sacrifices and the ritual sacrifice that they were involved in. Because we don't hear much about that in the history up until the time when the Khazar Jews have moved into Europe. I think there's about one or two instances that we hear of that aren't nearly as verifiable as the more recent ones that we have from the last 1,000 years. So there's overwhelming proof that this is accurate history then. That the Khazars took on Judaism and they became Jews en masse. So it's not worth arguing against this then, would you say?
No, it's really not. And one of the problems I have with Duke's thesis is also that this doesn't preclude us from seeing the Jews as a race. That's David Duke's big argument is that it means that they're a multinational people. And that's simply not the case because of their deep intermarriage. In fact, obsession of only marrying each other. They became a race anyway, with their own very specific mentality, and their own very specific language. And they're the same everywhere they go. And I want to mention that some of the scholars, and I've been reading some of this recently, that try to argue that the Jews are essentially Judean from the Old Testament, often include the region of the Western Khazar Empire in their definition of the Middle East. So they get to say that they're Middle Eastern, but they don't bother to tell you that, oh, our definition of the Middle East will actually include the northern part of the Black Sea. It used to be that our people were educated in the Old Testament, and no one reads it anymore. And that's a huge problem. It created so many myths about it. The reason that the Israelites were commanded to destroy the tribes of the area when they first came in from Egypt was because they were doing exactly the same thing that the Khazars did. It's open. And then, once the Jews got settled, they began doing the same thing themselves, and that's what gave rise to the prophets who condemned them over and over again. So this was supposed to be, true Israelitism was against. But the minute you start getting involved with money, international trade, you start getting involved with violence and magic and all this other garbage.
Well, I think once races have been mixing together for a while, they tend to stabilize anyway. So if the Jews had moved from the Byzantine Empire into Khazaria, they spent 300 or 400 years there interbreeding with them, then they moved into Poland, and they start interbreeding with the Poles, move into Russia, they start interbreeding with the Russians. Before then, you've got interbreeding with Canaanites in the area where they were in Judea, and after they're kicked out of Jerusalem, you've got some of these Sephardic ones that move to the Asian areas or the darker areas, and they tend to have a darker skin. But even now we have black Jews, Negro Jews, calling themselves Jews, and they still have Jewish characteristics. They still have a Jewish character. They still have certain Jewish features, like the Jewish nose and the Jewish lip and the Jewish brow that they have. So there are certain characteristics that you can pick out, that you can see in the Jews, no matter which particular type of Jew they are. They all have that. So I just because they are mongrelized, it doesn't mean that they're not a race. They seem to me to be an anti-race. They have a diabolical streak within them that means that they don't actually lose their Jewishness when they breed with these other races.
That's right. Remember, they you know, it's pretty rare that Jews interbred with, you know, Poles or Russians. That wasn't the case when Ezra brought them back to Jerusalem. The Jews that had remained in the area had interbred with others, and he condemned it in the most vicious terms you could imagine. Racial intermixing was so violently opposed by Ezra and the entire tradition. They use language that puts us to shame. They didn't do that very often, but they did do it, you know, in Old Testament times, and that was one of the biggest problems. And that's another problem with this theory that they all came from Judea, is that that would have meant that they would be so deeply inbred by now. That I can't imagine, you know, that's simply, it might be genetically impossible for that to occur. The Khazar Empire gives them a far broader base for interbreed. They don't interbreed, they don't marry non-Jews, especially back then.
Well, I know about the bits there in the Old Testament with Ezra when the tribe of Judah came back from Babylon. That's when Flavius Josephus says that was when the term Jew first came about, was with this remnant that came back from Babylon and interbred with the tribes that had moved into that Jerusalem area while they were gone. Then after that, you've got John Hyrcanus, who force converts all the Edomites or the Edomians to Judaism, and they all get circumcised and became called Jews from that moment on. So I think there's been intermixing ever since that time when they came back from Babylon, because you also had the proselytes of the gate and the proselytes of justice, and it pretty much became anyone that came into Judea could become known as a Jew and start following this religion, which by that time had become warped and twisted, because they took on some of the things that they picked up while they were in Babylon. And so you get to the point where Herod himself, the king of the Jews, is an Edomite. He's an Edomian, one of these Canaanites, and that's who the Jews today call Herod the Great, that they look up to. So I think this mixing and mongrelization, it was going on in the Old Testament times, going on back to 400 years before the birth of Christ, and it just stabilized and it continued. But obviously the largest component of it would have been in Khazaria, because you've got a huge area there, and there must have been a lot of Khazars. If you think that they claim that 90% of East European Jewry can be traced back to these Khazars, and there's also another interesting legend that the Khazars themselves claim to have come from Mount Seir, which was Edom or Edomia. They claim to have actually come from there, and I don't know whether that's from the Jews that moved there from the Byzantine Empire, because they were originally from Mount Seir, or whether it's because they were originally from Mount Seir and they moved to Khazaria 1,000 years before the Jews moved there and with their Talmud and took on Judaism. That's a question that I've never had answered. Are you aware of that at all?
Yes, I have. Back then, you're absolutely right. I was really referring to more modern times. You know, in the 1600s, you had to be a part of the Kahal system, and they only married each other. Prior to that, it did happen. But remember something else too. Once Khazar, once the empire was destroyed, Sarkal fell in 965, Itil fell in 968. The remnants then used Turkish tribes like the Pechenegs and the Avars to kind of do the same thing. And they were constantly invading Kiev and Rus and taking slaves. So even without the structure of the empire, they still functioned in the same way by simply using these different tribes, different nomads, who they were at one time, and manipulating them and offering them their expertise at the same time, and direction and strategic advice. And return, they got a huge cut of the booty and the bounty. And these were the slave raids that millions over a century were taken at this time. So even after the fall of Khazaria, this was the case. But as far as what you said, when Svatoslav left, the smashed, because they had in the 960s, the Khazars had shut down trade in the Volga River to punish Russia for being uncooperative and not paying them enough. And this is what sparked the Svatoslav's attack. Now, even though he was a pagan, he referred to the Khazars as Ishmaelites. So, I mean, this was the term to use at the time, which is interchangeable with Edomites. This was the unclean people. This was a very different, Esau versus Jacob. So he, even as a pagan, he's using this kind of terminology. He said, "I'm also destroy the Ishmaelites for the betterment of my people." So that was clearly the case even back then.
Wow, fantastic. That's really interesting. I think we've had a really good discussion today, Dr. Johnson. Thank you very much for coming on. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. And I'm not sure who we'll have tomorrow, but we will produce a Daily Traditionalist for you somehow. So until then, hail victory.
You've been tuned into the Daily Traditionalist with Matthew Heimbach at Radio Aryan.com.